The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Welcome to Commentary from the Edge. I'm your host, Elbert Lewis. Today, my rant is entitled American Military Weakness. Now, this rant has been building for a couple of weeks, and it started with the Russian takeover of the Crimea and our government's weak, sissified response to what they did in that land grab. But I wasn't really surprised because we have a liberal Democrat in the White House, and they're, you know, he can dispatch drones to kill a few terrorists. But when it comes to real military might, I think all liberals have a problem with that. So I wasn't really surprised by his tepid response. But what really got me going on this rant was the reaction to the situation on some of the urban talk shows. Now, it was mainly black people, and they were like almost applauding what the Russians were doing it because they were sticking it to the American government. And I guess they were reacting to the Republican congressional leadership's response to what the Russians did. And you know, they're a bunch of hawks. And they were like just totally disregarding the fact that there's a black man in charge of the government. And they were acting like the Russians were sticking it to the Republicans. And then the conversation moved often to black men serving in the military. Or their attitude was they really shouldn't serve in the military and help the white racist United States government. Because of that debate about us helping out the Ukrainians and possibly stationing foot soldiers there. And I thought, how short-sighted and how ignorant of history can you get? Because throughout the history of the United States, even before there was a United States, there have been black men serving in the military, including yours truly. You know, I for reasons that I've stated before, but I'll reiterate, I dropped out of college because of a sense of adventure, a sense of danger. You know, that was the war of my generation. And I, for some reason, I just had to participate. When a lot of young men were running to Canada or enrolling in college for the deferment, I was in college and dropped out. And if I was to be perfectly honest, besides the adventure, the sense of adventure and wanting to be a Marine, I wanted to know what it was like to kill people. And I'm not the only one. There have been thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of black men who have volunteered, even though we weren't treated as equals in this country, have volunteered to serve in the United States military. And like I said, even before there was a United States. Some historians cite Crispus Attucks, a black man, as the first person to die during a demonstration against unjust British rule. Look at the portrait of George Washington crossing the Delaware. There's a black man in the boat with him. So black men have been a part of the U.S. military since day one and have written some of the most glorious chapters in the U.S. military history. And most of the time, they didn't get the recognition or the credit for it. During the Civil War, the 54th Infantry Regiment of Massachusetts, a black regiment, was renowned for their courage, for their fighting ability. And the Spanish-American War in 1898, the charge up San Juan Hill. Hey, go back and read the real history, not the whitewashed version, and you will find that black soldiers of the 10th and the 12th Infantry Regiments, along with other white regiments, did the bulk of the fighting. And then Teddy Roosevelt came in at the last minute with his Rough Riders and took all the glory. But it was basically black infantrymen that made the charge up San Juan Hill possible by doing the bulk of the fighting and so weakening the Spanish forces that Teddy Roosevelt just walked into the glory spot in history. Black soldiers, buffalo soldiers, as the Indians called them, participated in the suppression of the Native Americans. So our hands are not clean in that. Moving on up, all the way through World War II, The Red Tails, the Tuskegee Airmen, had an excellent record as fighter pilots in Europe against the Nazis. Going up to Korea, that's when finally the U.S. military was desegregated and blacks fought well. And every American action since then, including Vietnam, where I served, maybe not as gloriously as previous black military men, but I did my part. And so for these people to be calling in to these talk show hosts, putting down black people in the military, I thought was incredibly stupid and ignorant about history. And moreover, they were applauding American weakness. They have no idea of the worldwide consequences of a weak American military. We have only to hearken back to the late 1930s when the Nazis came to power. The Western forces, England, France, et al., failed to stand up to Hitler. In the Far East, as long as the Japanese were terrorizing Orientals, the United States did nothing. We were even selling them scrap iron and crude oil, supporting their rampage through the Far East. And so we see what a weak response begets a country, a nation, an alliance. Putin is a bully and a dictator, and he has the potential to be another Hitler. And our weak response to that is almost guaranteeing that his ego will take over. When he sees how weak our response was, it will encourage him to go farther. And as he gains more confidence, takes more land, it will get to the point where we realize we have to do something. And then you have a situation where neither side can back down. And it's not just Europe, Eastern Europe, that's a problem. China has long coveted the island of Formosa, nationalist China. They have always thought that that should be a part of Greater China. And as we demonstrate our military weakness, our lack of political will to do something about aggression, Russian aggression in Eastern Europe, you can bet that the Chinese leaders are looking at that and saying, if the United States government is not going to risk anything for white Europeans, you can bet they're not going to risk anything for yellow-skinned Orientals. And so we have a situation where American military weakness is almost inviting people like Putin that have delusions of grandeur, that sees in the future some new Russian empire. We're almost inviting him to expand or to realize his dreams of empire. We're almost inviting it by our weakness. And why Obama and the people around him can't see this is beyond me. It's like they're educated people, but it's like they haven't read history. They don't understand human nature. They live in some fantasy world where if you treat bad people nice, they'll be nice back to you. That's not how it works. That's not how it works in a schoolyard with bullies. That's not how it works anywhere. You have to meet force with force when you're dealing with the human animal. We are an adversarial species. And so when you have one of us going rogue, you can't pat him on the head and say, be a good boy. No, you have to meet them force on force. Whatever level of force they demonstrate, you have to meet or exceed that to put them back in their place and have them understand that, no, that's not acceptable. And if you don't do that, then they will continue, they will get bolder, they will get stronger, and there will come a point where Putin realizes that his power depends on him continuing, even at the risk of war. But in his mind, because of the weak response, because we have a panty waist in the White House, there is very little risk of war. And so therefore, he will be emboldened to move further east. And you already see it now. A month after they took Crimea, you already see Russian agitators, Russian special forces, stirring up unrest among the ethnic Russians that live within eastern Ukraine. They're already demonstrating now. They're calling for elections. They're calling for separation from the rest of the Ukraine in order to join the Russian Republic. This is how it works. And pretty soon, there's going to be fighting amongst the Ukrainians, the ones of Russian ethnic heritage, and the others who wants to move towards the West. And then the Russians will announce proudly to the world, we're going to step in a humanitarian role to stop the fighting. And they will have troops on the ground, and they will have, by default, annexed Eastern Ukraine. And then what's next? Who knows? There is another important aspect of military preparedness that liberals just don't see, and it baffles me as to why they don't. At a time when the United States economy is hurting for jobs, why would you slow or scale back military spending? Because producing armaments, weapons for the military is a job creator. If you want to create high-tech jobs, low-tech jobs, and everything in the middle, spending on the military is the way to go. And by the way, this is something you can't ship offshore. For security reasons, you have to manufacture your weapons inside the borders of the United States. And so, why in the world would an administration who proudly proclaims to the world that their main thrust, their main objective, their main concern, their main policy is jobs, 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 why would they try to eliminate spending in an area that is exclusively American jobs? Not only is it American jobs designing, manufacturing, and producing weapons, but it's also American jobs manning those weapons. The military, those are jobs. They pay a salary. People support their families. They're trying to scale back a portion of the government that is almost exclusively American and American jobs. It boggles my mind that liberals can't see this. So now, because of weakness in a liberal democratic administration, which translates to a weakness in the American military, the world is entering a really dangerous phase right now, because Islam is on the march, and you see strongmen, dictators like Putin, are all too willing to take advantage of the perceived weakness. Now, some of you may be poo-pooing what I'm saying, but there are some rather ominous parallels to what's going on now and another time in history. And people who don't read history are doomed to repeat it. Throughout history, it has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's not strength that brings on war and aggression. It's weakness. Whenever you see an imbalance of power, the natural human adversarial species response is to take something from that weakness, whether it be land, resources, people as slaves or uncompensated labor, or it could be just for some political reason to intimidate somebody else. It's weakness, people, not strength, that encourages aggression. History is replete with examples, and yet we see liberal politicians today ignore that completely. And they act like anyone who supports a strong military is a throwback, is a Neanderthal. They'd rather spend tens, hundreds of billions, even trillions, on people who sit around and basically contribute nothing except more dependent people, rather than spend the money in the Defense Department creating jobs on both ends, whether you're designing, manufacturing, or using those weapons. Unfortunately, that is not how this administration thinks. That is not their mindset. And so we have roughly a year and a half or so, and Putin realizes, the Chinese realize, the Iranians realize. Anyone who has designs on imposing their philosophy, their religion, their way of life, their power on another group of people, they realize that they have an 18-month window to grab everything they can while we have this, well, I won't say what I really want to say about the administration, but while we have a weak administration. And I predict that the next year and a half is going to be rocky, because there's no telling what's going to happen in this world when the dictators, the extremists, the barbarians, look at us across the shining seas, and all they see is American military weakness. Until next time, I'm your host, Albert Lewis, from the Edge.